From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Here I am back in the Edge Radio studios, but the Edge Radio studios are falling apart like I was last week.
And you continue to.
It's Mark.
Ravages of age.
It's Mark, I'm back. We are The Dice Men Cometh, because when I say we, there's Mark, myself, and I in here in the studio, but I'm also joined by my good friend and gaming partner, Garth.
Hello, hello. And there is no Leon tonight because he's making all the chocolate, but it is good to know that you are back behind the buttons and breaking things from the get-go.
Well, look, I've been saying at work all day today I'm the last of the true phlegm barons, so my cold is almost gone, but I couldn't stay away from the studio for another week. Because I missed it so much, and I missed you, Garth.
Really?
No, I missed being in the studio and talking to you out there about all the fun things that I've been up to on my travels.
And oh boy, has a lot happened in gaming world.
Oh, I say. Look, before we go any further, it is episode 261 here on the 16th of May 2019 in the Edge Radio Studios in Hobart. We are the Dice Men Cometh. We're here to talk to you about board games, card games, role-playing games, the people who bring you those games, and sometimes the people who no longer bring you those games.
Correct. Correct.
So we're going to talk about the sad tale of an amazing little Australian company that is no longer producing games, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's really sad.
We're finally, I think we've teased it so many times, going to talk to you about a game called Tokyo Highway.
Yes.
I think we've teased that at about four or five episodes and we've never got to it. So we're going to finally get to it tonight. We're going to make some time. And then I'm going to tell a little bit of story of my travel through Southeast Asia, and in particular, some of the game stores I visited. Garth, have I covered everything off?
Well, that is pretty good, Mark, I must say. For an old fellow who hasn't been behind the buttons or talked in public for a long, old time, you slipped into it like an almost natural.
If it wasn't for whatever's happening with this microphone here that just stopped me a bit at the end, look, I have missed it, but I'm glad to be back. We'll be back to talk more
after
this.
This song.
Yeah, let's do it. Do it! Yeah, baby.
Hi, this is Matthew Dunstan, and you're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, the best podcast in Australian board gaming.
Ba-bum, ba-bum, there you go. The Beastie Boys, Sabotage, and us tonight here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And that is us, The Dice Men Cometh, here to talk to you all about board games, including this game, Garth. As I said, we've teased it. We've played it a number of times now.
Yeah, we have.
It's become our sort of go-to end-of-the-night game. We've finished the big game we've played. We've got a little bit of time up our sleeve. What are we going to do? We don't quite want to say goodbye to each other yet because it's only like 11:30 or something ridiculous like that on a school night. But let's just throw down a little dexterity game.
Correct.
And have some fun with it.
Well, that's the plan. Anyway, and the game we are talking about is Tokyo Highway.
Mm.
A game, as you say, we have teased time and time again, because it is one of those games that doesn't necessarily require an in-depth conversation.
Yeah.
Because mechanically, it's a very simple game, as a lot of dexterity games are. However, it is a great little and then slightly larger game, depending on the version that you have. So the game, as I say, Tokyo Highway, started life in 2016 as a two-player game, was then re-implemented with a four-player version, or you know, two- to four-player version a little bit later on, published by Itten, and it's got two designers, but I guess the primary designer is Naotaki Shimamoto. Done quite a few games, all in the sort of little and weird version. The most recent one was probably Stonehenge in the Sun, which was a Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah, that was the thing. It was almost like a pendulum that swings backwards and forwards and knocks over the rocks of Stonehenge.
Yeah, so essentially everyone was creating their own little Stonehenge, and then you'd have this massive pendulum. And the game did come with an attachment so it could be screwed into your ceiling.
Yes.
And then someone would release the pendulum, and if it happened to be that the pendulum, i.e. the sun, hit your particular Stonehenge, then bad stuff would happen. So
I remember when I saw that for one of my Kickstarter updates, I really wanted the pendulum to be magnetic and your Stonehenge rocks to be some form of metal so that there was all sorts of magnetic attractions, but it was just... It's just something that basically spun around and knocked stuff over.
Correct. And it was a little bit weird. Mm. I almost backed it purely based on Tokyo Highway, and then I looked at it and went, this is absolutely nothing like Tokyo Highway. I'm not going to back this. So what is Tokyo Highway? I hear you ask, Mark.
Is it not a highway you drive to Tokyo?
No.
Oh.
It is a highway or an highway you create. Because in this game...
Not just a highway... Lots of highways.
Correct. So players are going to be competing to place all of their cars on their own personal highway.
Ooh.
So never the cars and highways shall meet, although they will.
Yes.
Because...
In a pile of rubble.
Look, I guess what we're going to do is we'll talk about the four-player version primarily, because that is the one we've played the most of. The two-player version is the same game, just with two people... and with no obstacles.
Where's the fun in that?
Anyway, the four-player game, there will be up to four people sitting around a table, and you will be given a collection of paddle pop sticks and some cars that are teeny-weeny little wooden cars that might be a centimetre, maybe a centimetre and a bit long. They're itty-bitty bits of wood. You'll also get a whole bunch of grey, round things, which are the pylons,
and your paddle
to build up
your very stylish paddle pop highway. Those pieces are also grey, which is nice. Like it looks nice. The pieces look nice. Yes, they're all bits of wood, but it does look nice, and it does look like a really finished game. Yeah.
Correct. You'll also get two yellow tiles, which are your what are they? Interchanges, I guess.
Yeah,
because where you can look the way it's going to work is everyone's going to start. They're going to have one paddle pop stick that is on the table height going up to one single one of your grey pylons high, and they'll be evenly spaced out in a nice square shape. Then, in the four-player game, you can add these buildings, which are just blocks of wood that are also grey, that simulate, I guess, high-rise buildings, and in reverse player order, people will place them primarily in front of other people's roads to block them and make their highway building a little bit more tricky.
Well, look, just having been to, not Tokyo, but Hong Kong, that is what your highways have got to do. They've got to dodge around these massive big buildings to get people from A to B via C, through a tunnel, over a bridge, around these massive buildings.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you saying that the two-player doesn't use those, it disappoints me because they are a lot of fun because it just means... You can't go in a straight line.
So anyway, what are you going to be doing in this game? The goal of the game is construct a highway and be the first player to successfully place all your cars.
Mm.
And that's it. You have a little rule where every bit of highway you place, and a highway is a bit of your paddle pop stick, has to be precisely one higher or one lower than the current elevation of your existing highway, and that's where your pylons are going to come in.
That's right. You've basically each got a set of pylons all different heights.
Correct.
So you're constantly going up and down.
Yeah. And then there's only one variable, which is these yellow tokens, these sort of on and off, these interchanges where instead of just having one paddle pop stick of yours go on there and one coming off, if you've got your one paddle pop stick onto your yellow one, you can have two extra paddle pop sticks coming off, and that's going to allow you to spread your highway claws around all of Tokyo.
Mm.
And look, the way the turnals simply work is that you always have to add one bit of extra road onto one of your existing highways, so a paddle pop stick, and it's got to be on a pylon of yours, which is using your little grey discs. And as I say, it has to be one higher or one lower than your existing elevation, unless you are using the interchange ones, and they can be any height. So you can have some crazy roads that are up or down, but you've only got two of those, so they go very quickly.
Now, Garth, it sounds like there's virtually nothing to this. You know, put two pylons down and put a paddle pop stick across.
Yep.
But it's not that simple.
Well, it's not, because like in most games, you want to score points or get the most of something, and in this case...
You want to win. You want to win, Garth. That's what it's about.
Well, I don't. I'm not competitive. You will win the game if you're the first to place all of your particular vehicles on your highway. Great.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? Well, that's where the player interaction starts, because the only way that you are going to be able to place cars on your road, sorry, your highway, is to interact with other players' highways.
Mm.
And the way that you will be interacting is quite simply you will either be going over other people's highways or going under other people's highways. And this is where the most complicated part of this game, in terms of explanation, happens. The hardest part of the game is actually playing it, especially at the end of a night.
Yes.
Especially if you might have had a couple of beers. But anyway, we'll get to that.
Mm.
So the way that you will score points is by placing your cars on the highways and getting them all gone rid of. Fine. But you will only ever score points if you are the first to go over or under someone else's highway. And that's tricky. And it's tricky the first few times that you will play it to comprehend if you are the first or the second or the third or the fourth or whatever, but primarily the first person to go over or under. Because when you've got four players, it will very quickly become a mishmash of various highways, of various heights, some with cars, some without cars, some with no cars, some with cars that might have fallen off.
Yeah.
All of those things, but very simply, you need to place your highway, and if I'm going over someone else's highway, it needs to be the only bit of highway there, and then it needs to have nothing underneath it, because that means that it had something going underneath it, and it's going, like, it's exponentially potentially
yes.
complicated.
Yes.
But the simple rule is you need to be the first person to place a bit of highway over another bit, or the first person to put another bit of highway under an existing bit of highway.
Yeah, only the first one actually scores.
And if you happen to be the first person to put the first bit of highway over, you get to place one car. If you happen in one amazing move to put one bit of highway down that is the first to go over two different bits of highway, you'll get to place two cars.
Mm.
Similarly, if you're the first to do under, it's always going to be one car for each other bit of highway you are the first to either gone over or under. And that's the most complicated rule, which is tricky.
Yeah, and that...
And for first players, you will spend half your time going, well, I've placed that. Do I get points? Like, I don't understand. Should I get points?
Yes,
I think I get points.
I've crossed you there.
I'm the first to go under. And
That's right. Then you see that, I've crossed on that bit of the paddle pop stick, but right up the other end of the paddle pop stick, there's already one underneath there. Oh, I don't get points there, so I'm going to go and try and go somewhere else. And it quickly escalates into chaos, and then you add the other element, which is you've got to put your little car on with tweezers.
Well, you can. You can put them on with your hand. But the complication is...
Well, the reason you are using the tweezers is because there's roads everywhere.
Well, it's because it's a disconnected spaghetti junction, really, because you've got a whole bunch of interconnected roads that aren't connected, but they're going up and down. But, yes, you have to be able to place them on the road that you've just built, or the highway. And if, for example, your fingers are a bit shaky, or if, for example, you try and maybe drop the car from a centimetre above the highway just because you're a show person and you want everyone to know how confident you are, if your car falls off and then if any bits of highway fall off, that's not the end of the game. Of course not.
No.
Because Tokyo Highway isn't over. What you need to do is if you knock over any of any other player's pieces for every single piece that you've knocked over... you need to give them one of your pylons. So say I knock over a bit of your highway, Mark, that's one pylon. If on that bit of highway was a car, well, there's two pylons. If I happen to knock one of your pylons off as part of that, there's another one. So you make a mistake and you can very quickly find yourself without pylons, and if you have no pylons, you can't play anymore.
Yes.
You're out of the game. But even then, I've destroyed semi-destroyed Tokyo. The game's not over. I'm expected to then rebuild it.
That's right.
Ah!
Oh, that's such fun.
It is fun. It is real, very fun. But it's also very frustrating, especially the first game or two that you're going to play, because the scoring, it is not complicated, but it feels complicated because when you've got four players all doing it, it just gets very mishmoshy.
The great news, though, is that it doesn't take long.
No. 30 to 50 minutes is what it says.
And it is so much fun that you will find, we have found ourselves coming back to it again and again for that fun. I was trying to think, what other dexterity games? I mean, a lot of dexterity games are fun. A lot of them have a sort of a half gag that runs out of steam halfway through the game. Now, I have talked a number of times on this show about the TikTok Woodman. What's it called now?
Yeah, Click Clack Lumberjack.
That's right. Now that it's now called, and it was one of the first dexterity games that I played, where you're knocking the bark off the wood, but you don't want to knock the trees over. It's fun, and you know, but you're doing the same thing every turn. Someone always hits it too hard and knocks everything over. Laugh, set it up again.
And then you've got the grubs that add a little bit to it, but it's really not much more complicated than Jenga using a little plastic axe. Yeah,
Another one I love is Animal on Animal.
Yep.
You know, which I went out and bought a copy where it's basically, again, it's like Jenga but with animals, and you've got to stack them on each other and they're funny shapes and they've got to be touching each other, and you roll the die and it tells you, oh, well, this time you're not placing it on top, you're placing it next to it, so you're extending the base a bit. But then if you knock stuff over, you get extra animals from other people. But it's sort of slightly advanced Jenga. I mean, and Jenga itself is fun, I guess, even, you know, in terms of a quick, light dexterity game.
Yeah, absolutely.
This just, excuse me, the dexterity aspect is there, but just that little wrinkle of having to be the first and only the first to go over or under just adds that little wrinkle that just has you thinking a little bit more, where it's not just, I just do something and I don't really care what happens.
Correct. And most importantly, it's a bit of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
So look, I would strongly recommend people play it if they haven't. It certainly plays in its half an hour to 50 minutes and probably 15 to 30 minutes if you play it quickly. Look, as far as the rankings for dexterity games go, it doesn't factor in sort of the top lists yet.
Why not?
But it'll probably get its way up there. I mean, you know, we've got some big names. Obviously, Crokinole is going to be the big, big behemoth in the room. So that's your number one rank dexterity game. And this is, what is the heading in BGG? Dexterity in action. You got Pitch Car, you got Class, you got Junk Art, Fuse, Flick 'em Up.
Yeah, I was going to say that the genre of flicking games now with Catacombs and Flick 'em Up and what one just launched, SEAL Team Flicks.
Yep.
The flicking games, you know, they're another sort of genre themselves, and Crokinole is also one of those.
Yeah.
This is a little bit different.
It is.
And I don't know if there's a separate genre of stacking games.
Well, this isn't called stacking, but again, then you've got your Rhino Heroes and your Super Rhino Hero, and obviously Leon is a big fan of that particular genre, but he also enjoys kids' games because he's Leon. But that's okay. So look, I would happily sit down and play this.
Yeah.
It is also a game that you can virtually almost make yourself. Just eat a whole bunch of ice creams.
Go and get a little bit of dowling. Some broom handles.
Yeah, exactly right. And figure out cars for yourself. And what's wrong with that? It's a bit of fun.
I don't think it's that expensive, though, to go out and buy the real thing. And it is nice and
the thing
gray
is,
and
the thing
painted.
Is, it was hard to get for a while. Yeah, because you had this two-player version come out in 2016, and then it got a little bit of buzz. And people said, how can I get this?
Yeah.
Can't. And then they released this bigger box version.
Look, there you go. That is definitely a hearty recommendation
from both
of us for Tokyo Highway. Certainly one we'll always happily sit down and play.
Yep.
I'd like to hear from you out there about what your favourite dexterity games are. Maybe you can hit us up on Instagram, because I'm pretty sure we've got a video of Tokyo Highway on our Instagram. It's probably a few back now because we're pretty busy on the Instagram feed, which is at Dice Men Cometh, surprisingly. But yeah, if you look back, you'll see us building a Tokyo Highway and then smashing it a bit and then building it back up again. Check that out. But apart from that, we have got a lot to get through because we've got to talk about the sad and sorry tale.
Well, yeah, we're going to come back and look, it is, you know, a bit of a wake,
it's
I
not
guess.
Good news, yeah.
Well, with the Dice Men Cometh, it's Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we'll be back after this particular song.
Hello, I'm Colby Dauk, studio manager at Plaid Hat Games, and you're listening to the Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there you go. That was Kate Nash with 3 AM. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And look, it's very sad to be here this afternoon, this evening.
I'm really happy to be here, Garth, and actually before we go down the sad trail, I want to go up the happy trail for a minute.
Okay. Is that what you're calling it these days?
Yeah. I listened to a little bit of the show last week, lying at home in bed sick.
Yep.
Just see if you and Leon did okay without me. And I think you did a sterling job.
Oh, thank you.
And in fact, the week before, I listened to a bit of that show as well, and you did a sterling job too, although the introduction was probably the best part. And then the week before that, I don't think we had a show. But you and Leon, I just wanted to say, did a great effort. You know, I know that neither of you is so accomplished as myself in the button-pushing department, but I thought you made a good effort. So thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, Mark. I can feel the genuineness radiating off.
No. I appreciate it. I appreciated the rest, and now I'm back almost fighting fit and loving being in the Edge Radio studio tonight.
Excellent. So you being back is yet another reason why I'm a bit sad. But not nearly as sad as this next topic. So, Mark, take it away.
Well, the little Aussie game company that could for such a long time now couldn't, can't, won't.
Isn't.
Is not. Very sadly, it was announced via an update on the Hand of Fate Kickstarter, update something 110 or something amazing like that, that the little Brisbane game company Rule and Make, who we have become good friends with, Alan and Alana, we've known them almost from the very start. They've been very generous to us with giving us some of their games and talking to us and letting us into the process, giving us a window into how games are produced and how companies are formed and seeing that success. And now Alan announced in that comments feed that unfortunately, for various reasons, and we'll talk about them a little bit in a moment, Rule and Make is no more.
Exactly right. And that, look, it is sad because they've been around since, when is it? I think
2014.
Well, 2013, according to their BGG page. That was when it was founded.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
And
folded now.
Amazingly, you know, the very first products they produced were little boxes to put your Magic cards in and, like, very attractive little boxes, I must say. And they did draw the attention, I'm sure, even at this early stage of people on BGG and also the Dice Tower, I believe. These lovely little boxes that were designed to hold your Magic cards, hold your tokens, very well designed. I don't know who it was out of the guys that designed it, but somehow that gave them a little window into the world of games. Mm. And they smashed that window open and dived through with their very first Kickstarter, a little card game called Rise to Power.
Yeah, and look, it wouldn't be Awake unless we talked about Celebration of Life.
That's
and this
right.
is exactly what the main thrust of this conversation. It obviously has a sad ending and we'll get to that. But, yeah, they had, for quite a few years, a really great catalogue of games.
Yeah.
And it grew almost every year.
And as I said, you know, apart from the little the card cases, they came almost out of nowhere with Rise to Power. Now, look, none of these games earned the guys millions and millions of dollars because games don't do that unless you've got a Gloomhaven or something like that. But it certainly put the little flag up above the parapet to say, hey, we're here and we produce a good game. And one of the things they did so well, pretty much right through their medium-lived career for a game company maybe, is manage Kickstarter campaigns. And, you know, Rise to Power got them a lot of fans.
Yes.
Not just because it was a great little game, but because their communication and the way they ran the Kickstarter was so professional for a couple of guys from Brisbane who were sort of doing this part-time as it was back then.
Yeah.
They were very, very regular with their communications. They always had something to say.
I'm just trying to see what it raised. So you just keep talking.
Yeah.
I'm going
to
see what.
So Rise to Power first came to light in 2014. Then they also had was a funny little card game called Ninja Dojo Fight, which we talked about on the show because I think we gave away a couple of copies.
Yeah, we did. There you go. So their very first project, 852 backers, $28,800 Australian dollars.
Yeah, and then they had an expansion for that game later on that came out. Then after that, in 2015, they had Entropy,
Now, again,
is that the right pronunciation?
Well, if Leon was here, of course, he'd call it Enthropy. Hello, Leon, if you're listening. But it was a great little game, and it was a small little game.
Yeah.
Didn't have a lot to it, but quite a lot of gameplay in a small little box where shards of four or five different dimensions were shattering because of the entropy, and you basically had to reassemble your own little tableau, which was a picture. Neat little mechanic of that where people all play their cards at the same time and some of them will trigger and some of them won't,
yeah,
depending on who played what. And this little thing called the anchor that sometimes affected things. It was this great little coin that was a special.
Yeah, and I just like the simple mechanic of if two players play the same action, then you're both stuffed.
Yeah, it cancels each other out.
So you've got to keep an eye on each other around the table, so that's really cool. And look, it was another little really good small box game.
Yeah, and then they actually re-released that a little, what, probably 18 months, 2 years ago,
yep,
calling it Entropy Worlds Collide. I think at the same time that they released an expansion. It was basically a broader release into the North American market as opposed to just Kickstarter. And look, from the outside, it certainly seemed to us like these games were being successful. You would think successful enough to keep a company going, but it's so hard to tell from outside. And as we all can see, this market is getting more and more crowded. Now, maybe it's slowed a little bit in the Kickstarter world in the last 12 months. There haven't been so many massive games, but there's still a lot of smaller games. Now, before we talk about maybe what contributed towards the downfall, let's talk about some of their other games. So they also produced Robots and Rockets in 2015. Another little fun card game.
Yep.
That one designed, I think that was designed by Cy Robertson from Melbourne.
Correct.
Another game we really enjoyed playing, and I think they actually released an expansion for that, Lightspeed,
mm-hmm,
not so long ago as well. So not only do they produce these great games, they also support them. Many of their games had free bonus expansions, you know, it just didn't stop.
Mm.
Then, I don't know if this was the one that sort of really brought them a lot of fame, but the most popular hamburger game out there, I would say, and certainly Mr. Tom Vassell was very happy with this, was Burger Up.
Yeah. Yeah, so Burger Up was a really cool small box game just about creating various types of burgers, and it was, you started with some buns, and then you would add your pickles and add your cheese and add your various meats, and there's all different combinations thereof, and you'd get more points for your bigger burgers.
Mm.
And it was fun, and I remember taking a preview copy, yeah, of this to BorderCon. It must have been
2015, maybe, yeah, even like well before it came out.
And it was the first game that we played.
Yes.
We didn't get more than 2 meters through the doors. And we said to Melissa, friend, yep, of the show, Melissa Rogerson, would you like to play a game? We brought Burger Up, and then we sat down and made burgers for the next hour. And it was a cool game and continues to be a cool game. And there are still very few, including zero that I can think of right now, hamburger building games.
Yeah, there's not a lot of those simple food games. We've had, was that Australian one that just released recently?
Scofton.
Yeah, Scofton. And I'm thinking of, I think GameRight had a game, Slamwich, yeah, which is sort of almost a very, very, very simple version of this. But the fact it came with, you know, the Burgers of the World expansion, it was so much fun. And it had enough complexity to keep you interested for an hour or so. Art really nice. I mean, all their games have great production values, something another thing they did really, really well.
Yeah.
But as I said, I remember seeing when Tom Vassell reviewed that, and he was really excited about it, which was great news. As we said, a little game company out of Brisbane.
That's right.
After that, they had Skywood. I'm sorry, I'm just running out of puff here. It's just not quite gone away. So they had Skywood in 2017.
Yep, by Brendan Evans.
And that one, of course, was one of the nominees for the Kangaroo Award last year.
Yeah.
Another great little interesting game with that mechanic of I split up the piles, but then you get to choose which pile you're going to take. Or yeah. I have to go last in the pile.
Correct.
Selection.
And again, that was a cool little game. It only stayed for about an hour or so. I didn't necessarily like the setup where you do have to take all the cards, choose who gets what, because I found that as a bit of downtime in the game personally. But I really enjoyed the hand management side of that game. And look, it did get a whole bunch of free promos that were released on BGG, and you basically, I think it was a free promo a day for a week or something like that, and it just altered a little bit of gameplay variability, so that was nice. And again, it looked really cool, and it was simple fun.
Yeah, and then I guess their first foray into big games, Smiths of Winterforge, which they did in combination with Table Tyrant Games, another group from Brisbane.
Yeah.
Now, we got an early prototype copy of that, and to be honest, we were a little bit ho-hum about it, thinking there wasn't a lot of game in there, but by the time it got to Kickstarter, which was, we probably got that, I'd say early 2017, we got a copy quite early. By the time it came back to Kickstarter, they'd almost reinvented the whole thing, made a fair dinkum big box game out of it. That one has been really popular. That one raised, we're talking about today, I think it was 80-odd thousand.
Yeah.
On Kickstarter. Had quite a lot of support, has been received really well.
That's right. It was critically really well regarded.
Mm.
And that's what you think you would want.
Yeah.
You want the reviewers, the people who can influence, for lack of a better term, to say, we recommend you get this game.
Yeah.
And people did.
And then now I think, if I've got the timing of this right, not long after that, or maybe just slightly before, because the Smiths throws me a bit because we had it so much earlier than the Kickstarter, was the what we thought was the only hiccup in the road was the T2029... the Terminator board game.
Well, I have a feeling, I could be wrong, I have a feeling it was after the other one, but T2029 was going to be big.
Yeah.
You know, this was an Ian O'Toole design game, you know. He's well known across the board gaming world for his amazing art and graphic design, but he designed this game.
Yeah.
You've got the official license of the Terminator product.
Yes.
You've got heaps of dice manipulation. You've got a big board. You've got these amazing minis that look really cool. Yeah. And it went to Kickstarter and I was back at number three.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is really exciting. And then it just went, and it didn't get traction.
Yeah, it was just a strange one because it had everything going for it. It had the Terminator name. It wasn't one of these ones, as we've seen lately, where they throw it up and, license? What's that? You know, it was officially licensed. It looked great. The mechanics were there. It had Ian O'Toole's name behind it. It looked really good. The minis looked really good. I didn't understand. You were on it as soon as it was out of the gates. We saw some pre-production stuff, I think, at PAX, and it looked really good. And it stalled, and it's like that took all the wind out of their sails for a little while.
Mm.
And, of course, we were hoping, well, we know that's going to come back. It's just going to be a matter of whether it's going to be a retail version as opposed to Kickstarter, or maybe the theme will change, or, you know, maybe they'll do it in conjunction with another big company, CMON or something. And then what came steaming through and just smashed all the records and blew people out of the water, the Hand of Fate Ordeals board game, which it hasn't been fulfilled for that long. It's only been out, is it 6 months maybe? I don't know if Leon's had his for that long. But as we said, it was at the time the highest ever funded Australian board game.
400 and something thousand?
It almost hit the $500,000 Australian dollars.
Mm.
A great game. They worked in conjunction. They did a lot of touring around Australia, doing promo events in game stores with it. It looked great. The art.
They had art, but then they brought on Ian to sort of get the art and the graphic design to all merge and mesh together really nicely.
Yeah, and I mean, they had the license and the art and the look from the video game, which in itself was quite popular.
Yeah.
From Defiant Development, another group from Brisbane. And as I said, you know, that game almost got them $500,000 Australian dollars. And at that stage, I know we were thinking, like, these guys just can't put a foot wrong.
Yeah.
And they're just going to go from strength to strength to strength.
And it's a great game. We've played it quite a few times.
Yep.
Really interesting deck building plus adventuring plus tableau sort of construction. So it ticks a lot of boxes there. And again, it's not a game that's for everybody, but nothing is. But it looked great, but it did not fulfill as quickly as, I guess, Rule and Make had historically been able to do. And again, that is that sign of going up in the next level of size and complexity and having a whole bunch of big minis and components and blah, 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 blah. So that wasn't, you know, up to their standards, I dare say, in terms of fulfilling on time and doing it the way that they had previously.
Yeah, and I think they had a few production hiccups in China, which dragged it out. And look, a lot of games have that these days. I know I'm just about to get in three or four weeks. Seventh Continent.
Yeah, okay.
Finally. I mean, how many years ago did I pay half a bajillion dollars for that and the expansion?
How about our spoons, Mark, that you made us buy in 2010 or whenever it was? It must have been the first project launched on Kickstarter. Still haven't received
those spoons. But, you know, it's hardly a board gaming Kickstarter now without that update that comes and says, oh, look, it's not all bad news. We've just had a slight production hiccup where one round of cards or one lot of minis or something has just gone astray and we've gone to China and we've sorted it out, but it's going to mean now it's 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. There's going to be a delay.
Correct.
So it happens to the best of them. So I don't know whether that was part of the downfall or the fact that it was the stalled 2029 project. Because I wasn't a backer of Hand of Fate because Leon got it, I didn't know about the production issues until really I looked into the comments to see were there any hints or was any more information about what had happened.
Yep. And look, yeah, I wasn't a backer either. I haven't read the comments. But look, it was pretty clear that, you know, the communication that had been there previously wasn't quite there on behalf of Rule and Make.
Mm.
And, you know, that does send out warning signs, I dare say.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of posts on that on BGG. But anyway, look, let's talk about, you know, the company that was.
Yeah.
And I guess the reasons why.
And look, Garth, we've been lucky enough to have a relationship with these guys. And you went to Brisbane.
Yeah.
And went out to dinner with Alan.
Yeah.
And with Martin Wallace.
Exactly. So, yeah, there was myself, there was Alan, there was Alana, there was Barantis.
Yep.
Who's the designer of Hand of Fate. And then, yes, one young Mr. Martin Wallace. And we sat around and played some games that I probably still can't talk about and then ate a burger, which is thematically appropriate. But look, you know, yes, Alan and Alana and the team at Rule and Make are exceptional people. And I do count particularly Alan and Alana as really good friends and especially friends within the hobby. So look, you know, I was really lucky to have a good chat with Alan, you know, over the last day or so. Purely, you know, starting with I'm a really, really sorry and genuinely sorry that this Australian board game publisher is no more.
And
because, you know, I can't name another Australian games publisher that was, you know, of the size and of the reputation that Rule and Make had been,
yes,
I guess.
Yes.
There was a lot of, you know, there's Grail Games, but they primarily are doing buying games and redesigning or republishing them. But there aren't really many major Australian publishers that are known internationally.
No.
So, look, it was a real shock. So, anyway, look, without sort of prattling on too long, the background of it from a Rule and Make perspective, and I'm just going to sort of cut and paste a little bit of the information that Alan and I talked about, is that, look, it's complications with the fact that as gamers, if your game is not on the shelves and selling really, really well in that first little bit of time when it's released, it might get 2 months of shelf life and then it's fallen off and it's the back and it's the discount bin and all the money goes out of it because there's the next thing, there's the next thing, there's the next thing. So there's that churn and burn for gamers just looking after the hotness. So it really doesn't matter if Hand of Fate or Skyward or Entropy or Burger Up is a great game. It's got to be a great game in enough hands in the first couple of weeks or months for it to get any traction at all. Obviously, the failure of T2029, which was a licensed product that comes with inherent costs. Mm. It's not a game that you just have this idea about and create it, there's intellectual property that is really well known the globe over that you are buying.
Yep.
And that doesn't come cheap.
No.
And then when the project at some point during its life, and I can't remember how far it was, but it had raised about $50,000, it was pulled by Rule and Make.
I think it's about after about the first week of the Kickstarter, maybe, where it was obvious that it had stalled.
Yep. That was money that could not be recouped. Yep. You'd already paid for the Terminator license. You'd probably already paid because there was a hell of a lot of artwork already done. And again, with Kickstarter, you need to have your artwork done and you can kind of just figure out the gameplay afterwards. Mm. But this was a game by Ian, art by Ian, and all of that. So that was not so great. But what it also meant is that they had this big hole in the production schedule. They'd sort of planned in, okay, well, we'll have T2029 and that'll then hopefully do all right and we'll use the funds for that to then fund the next project and the next project, which obviously, you know, didn't work. But in that similar vein, Alan was saying that creating partnerships is tough.
Yeah.
You know, because if I have a great idea for a game and I put it out there and it's successful, you know who makes all the profit? Me. But Mark, if you and I come up with a great idea and we put it to market and we make the same amount of money on Kickstarter, we're sharing that profit 50-50. So you've in essence got to do double the result to get the same amount of profit that you would get if it was just your sole property. And I guess you look at the two successful products that were very clearly team efforts, I guess, and that was Smiths of Winterforge.
Yes.
That, you know, they sort of assisted with Table Tyrant to create that. And then Hand of Fate Ordeals, which was that partnership with
Defiant Development.
I always keep meaning to say Deviant, but Defiant Development. You know, that although it was, you know, especially in the Hand of Fate situation, it was very successful.
Mm.
The money's still going into to two pots there. It's not nearly going to the one way, which you need to have that for the going capital.
Yeah.
And look, you know, Alan did mention that there was also that disconnect between critical approval of games versus sales. And that's where it again shows that, you know, people like the Dice Tower and Rado and Shut Up and Sit Down and all the bigger ones in our hobby, yes, they will influence their audience. But at the end of the day, if you're watching a video from Tom Vassell, if it's not a theme or not a mechanic that you're interested in, you're still not going to go out there and just give it a go because someone said they liked it.
And I think with a lot of the Rule and Make games, it wasn't the case of a massive burst onto Kickstarter and forget it.
No.
You know, and all the money's going to be made from the Kickstarter and then forget about after sales.
Forget
about retail. I think with all their games, it was very much, hey, let's get this game out there and now it's out there, let's sell a few copies. And as you said, it's if you don't, those sales don't have any tail to them and they disappear quickly, as you said, onto the back shelf in the discount bin, there's virtually no money there at all.
And then the other things are just the nature of being in the wrong side of the planet.
Mm,
you know, big expenses with going across to international gaming conventions, which, look, the two main things you want to get out of it is immediate sales.
Mm-hmm.
Plus you also want to get exposure to primarily a North American market for these games. You know, they're not heavy Euros that they're producing. So you need to tap into that North American market where you can get some traction and get some decent sales. So the simple cost of taking a couple of employees from Australia across to the USA with a however many loads of games that you want to do, plus the fact that you've got to pay to be at these cons, it's not a cheap exercise. So obviously things like that contributed. So look, there's going to be contributing factors. They are some, and I really do appreciate Alan letting us into that situation because it must be a tough time.
Yeah.
You know, these guys have brought up this little gaming baby and it's, you know, it hasn't sort of grown up the way that they wanted it to.
I think they both went from the stage of doing this, you know, part-time and on the weekends to where it became their full-time jobs.
Yep.
And obviously so that means they'd given away their other jobs and to be in this situation. But we feel for both Alan and Alana and anyone else associated with Rule and Make, but obviously it's mostly those two people.
Well, it's those two, but they also had a real investment in Australian game designers and artists. And that's the sort of gaping hole is that I think for a lot of Australian smaller designers and independent artists, a company like Rule and Make was their sort of stepping stone to a more wider audience. And that's going to be sorely missed, I think. So, look, you know, I tip my hat to Alan and Alana for years and years of hard work, for some great games, for some games that didn't get up, and for some games that were a bit of fun and everywhere in between. So I'm really sad that Rule and Make are passing, but I'm also excited for the future of Australian gaming anyway. So on that note, here's a song, and we're going to come back with a little bit of a chat about Mark's holiday. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. G'day everyone, Garth here, live from the toilet. I've just thought I'd pause the app I'm playing at the moment to give a quick shout out to all our Patreon backers, because their money makes a huge difference to us. Every single dollar we get, we put back into the show. So far, it's allowed us to go to several conventions this year and also to be able to get enough money to keep creating great content for the show. I also wanted to give a big shout out to every new listener that we've got over the last several months who may not even know we have a Patreon. Now, if you feel like you've got a dollar or more burning a hole in your pocket every month and you just don't know what to do with it, jump on over to Patreon, search for The Dice Men Cometh, and no doubt your money will go to a great cause, which is getting us out there to more conventions. Every dollar we get goes back into the show. So we make zero money out of this. It goes to getting us to conventions, creating content, and making the show as good as it really can be. So look, anyway, I'm finished with my message now. Got to get back to the app. And thanks so much for listening. All right, well, wake up, everybody. Because if you fell asleep, that was Angie Hart with When You Sleep. You're with the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Now, Mark is going to give us his quick fire, while informative, travelogue about his recent holiday.
That's right. Well, as some of you may know, because you might have seen me posting on Instagram and maybe Facebook, I took a little holiday to some Southeast Asian countries, or Hong Kong actually isn't south. It's probably, let's just call it an Asian country. It's part of China, of course. But, of course, when I travel, I don't get to do it that often. But when I get travel, I always like to visit board game stores and see what they're doing. I did it when I went to America a couple of years ago. Leon, of course, was lucky enough to go to Snakes and Lattes. So in Hong Kong, I searched out on Google Maps all the board game stores and cafes. There were quite a few.
Okay.
And when I was out and about, it was good to go, hey, I'm here in Wan Chai, what's around? And what I found in Wan Chai, I think it was my second day in Hong Kong, was a store called Jolly Thinkers. Now, the funny thing about Hong Kong is none of these places were on the ground. Jolly Thinkers was on the 11th floor of the Bayfield building at 99 Hennessy Road in Wan Chai, and it was a retail store, board game cafe, sort of gaming club, all crammed into quite a small space with quite a few tables for people to playing and quite a few people in there playing.
Good.
I met a couple of their lovely staff. I didn't stay long because it took me quite a while to find it because it was on the 11th floor of this otherwise normal building. But I did buy a copy of Cockroach Poker, which I'd had my eye on for a while in there, and they had quite a lot of nice little games. They also told me about their trip to Essen. They went to Essen because they are also publishers, because they do Cantonese translations of some games, some small Euro card games, like Masquerade from, who was that? Anyway, one of the Asmodee groups and a few others. And then they had a couple of games where they'd got the original one and made a few different ones. Anyway, quite a successful little group. And I think they also had another store somewhere in Hong Kong. I didn't find that one. But that was Jolly Thinkers. Then a couple of days later, I came across Capstone Games, which you think the 11th floor was high. They were on the 23rd floor of the Golden Swan Commercial Building. And again, it's one of those ones you get in a tiny lift, you know what floor, and then you get the wait for the door to open, you don't know what to expect. And again, it was, you know, good retail space, but lots of tables of people playing games, food and drinks. I met the lovely Amy. She got Sarah and I set up in the corner playing Holding On, The Troubled Life of Billy Kerr, which we hadn't played before. And in fact, I enjoyed it so much, I've teed up a secondhand copy that I'm picking up from our good friend Renee at BorderCon.
Wowee.
So we had a lovely game there. I think we stayed for about 90 minutes playing that game. We had a drink. We may or may not have had something to eat. We ate so much in Hong Kong. It was great. But, yeah, so again, retail space, cafe, board game library, club. And then I also stumbled across, on our last day in Hong Kong, a place called Sweet and Fun Cafe on the 11th floor in Dundas Square, Dundas Street, which is across in Mong Kok. So on the other side, on the mainland side as opposed to the island side, stumbled in there, I think, just after midday. They weren't open.
What?
They were getting ready to open, but they really... Or with all these places, they seem to open up about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, Hong Kong retail doesn't really open up till 10 or 11 That's o'clock right. anyway, so...
So they sort of go through the afternoon and evening, have a lot of people. You pay a minimal amount of money to go and play games. Obviously, you can buy food and drink, and you can buy games there as well. So I popped into that one, and they were all a similar sort of size, you know, small, office, high, hard to find, unless you know what you're looking for. So if you are going to these places or other... Find out where they are first, because they are hard to find because they're high in the building. After Hong Kong, I went to Vietnam.
You did.
I didn't play any board games there. I saw some in the
retail
store. That's
not true.
That's about
you
it.
Played the Sorry. Game.
No, that was on the cruise. I played the game on the cruise. I played Jaipur on the cruise.
Yeah, and where was the cruise boat, Mark?
The cruise boat.
Was it in Vietnam
it
waters?
It was in Vietnamese waters.
There
correct.
You go. Thank you.
Then I went to Singapore. Didn't have much time in Singapore, only a couple of days. And it was so hot.
And your hands were full of satay anyway.
That's right. But I did stumble across Battle Bunker in Boogie Plus. Boogies is a big market area in Hong Kong. Again, this is on the third...
Singapore.
Sorry. I'm getting confused now. It was just so amazing. This was on the third floor of a big shopping mall, a larger store. And I think there might be a couple of Battle Bunkers, maybe. But they had a lot of play space... A huge retail space. I met the very friendly Daniel. I picked up a copy of Game of Thrones Hand of the King, which I've been wanting to get for a while.
Yep.
And also Unlock the Island of Dr. Gorse, which is another escape room game that Sarah and I played in the weekend, and we didn't do very well because it's quite a hard one.
Aww.
But, look, just my quick retail therapy in Hong Kong and in Singapore.
Yes.
All lovely people. Lovely to get out and meet gamers. I took photos in all those places and posted on our Instagram account. You can check them out there. All the staff were so friendly. And look, if you do go out traveling, check out your local board game scene wherever you go.
Exactly
it's
right.
It's always lots of fun.
Definitely. So thank you very much for that, Mark.
There you go.
You also got engaged, but not as exciting as all the game stores that you went to go and see. So, look, we've been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been episode 261. We have to get out of here.
Mm.
But I just want to say the name of the song that we are going to leave you with. The name of the song is Keen for Kick-Ons.
We are going to kick on too.
We are.
To play a game.
But the name of this particular band is called the Psychedelic Porn Crumpets.
Let's go out and listen to that one. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to be back. We will be back with you soon. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.